Chapter 57 Lights in the Mist. Maywen waited until the mist of the lake had crawled inland and obscured the open grassland before she sneaked into the twilight of evening for another glance at the stalemate they had faced for 3 days. They encamped in a weedy, though spacious, copse of trees that grew a mile from the slope that descended to the beachhead. Their rejoicing at having come so far and nearing what they hoped were friendly fortifications was dashed instantly at the half-elf's first report. Uyumark had control of the beach and the hastily built fort and enjoyed the security of numbers and position. The only way off the shard lay as far out of reach as the moons in the sky. Once Maywen confirmed repeatedly that she, despite her experience, could not conjure up a way past the barricade, conversation in the party lapsed into laconic grumbling and terse complaints. Maywen could find no fault with their collective surliness. What bread remained had the texture and density of rock, and the dried fruit had gradually turned black and leathery. Of the two, the fruit claimed favour, for the length of time required to chew it at least afforded the illusion of a larger meal. Adding to this, daylight no longer brought relief from the cold, and during their second night, an inch of snow fell that did not melt away from the blonde grass until well past midday. Shoulders hunched habitually beneath tattered cloaks, and sore muscles cramped from the cold and lack of exercise. As she stepped to the edge of the tree line, Maywen breathed in the smell of the lake, damp and bitter, tinged with the more unpleasant smell of scaled hides and bubbling cook pots. The fog dampened the steady pounding of Uyumark drums, but as she jogged out into the field, she noted that the character of the beats differed from what she had grown accustomed to in her previous forays. An increased frequency and subtle shift in the rhythm signalled a change, and while she did not know how to interpret the language, reporting even the minutest difference in their circumstances to the party would provide her human companions at least a day's worth of pointless speculation to help pass the time until rescue or death. Stealthily she pushed forward, keeping low among the tall grass and scattered bushes, which dampened her leggings with the watery residue of the mist. Proximity to the pounding beat of Uyumark's speech confirmed her initial perception. A note of agitation resounded within the menacing cadence. Carefully, she wound her way to a mound to the left and above the beach, scooting forward on her belly until she could glimpse the Uyumark encampment. The virtue of her elven blood allowed her eyes to penetrate the weak, light, and swirling mist. At first, she saw nothing that would account for the change she had discerned earlier. As before, the Uyumark surrounded both sides of the wall, half facing out toward potential threats from the lake, the remainder watching the hill and waiting for an attack or wild attempt to circumvent their lines to gain the freedom of the water. But even should the weary travellers gain such freedom, the Uyumark had burned all the boats, a fact Maywen had not yet worked up the courage to tell the ragged survivors of the caravan. Given time and means, they could probably construct a rude raft, but the thought of them awkwardly hoisting such a craft onto their shoulders and charging the Uyumark lines like beggars with a battering ram brought a grin to her face, despite the decided lack of levity in their situation. The probability of the Uyumark archers butchering them before they paddled to knee-deep waters returned her expression to its usual sobriety. A gentle breeze momentarily cleared a portion of the hill that descended to the wooden wall, and in the brief moment of clarity she saw what she was looking for. A ragged line of hunters, bashers, archers, and warriors descended in a file to an audience of their fellow creatures, who ogled them and slapped their chests in a staccato commentary. The idea that their enemies were receiving reinforcements momentarily gripped her heart with terror and frustration, until a few minutes of additional vigilance revealed something more favourable. While little more than faint shadows even to her eyes, the way many of the creatures walked or carried themselves was off somehow, and it took her only a few moments of puzzling to discern that several of the Uyumark limped, while others held injured arms close to weary bodies, rather than swinging them as they normally would when walking. This was not a reinforcement. This was a retreat. Maywen slid backward and turned over, letting the obscuring fog envelop her in its dampness until full darkness had fallen. What did they leave behind them that could put large numbers of Uyumark to flight? Had Aethrys and Shadan Cairn survived the Battle of Dunnock Falls with a large enough remnant of his army to push the Uyumark toward the shore? Had the soldiers that once occupied the walls regrouped somewhere behind them? Both possibilities struck her as wrong. The Uyumak had nearly decimated the soldiers at Dunnock Falls before she had run out of the meadow that day, and the soldiers that had once occupied the fortifications at the beach had no doubt been trapped on the wrong side of their own protection and been slaughtered, although they all hoped that some few had escaped in boats back toward the portal to deliver warning. Shivering, she rose and picked her way through the field back to the quiet, cold camp, where she related her news to the huddled group. They raised the same possibilities that she had to herself, dismissing them and reintroducing them with desperate buts and what-ifs. Frustration and irritability ended the conversation nearly an hour later, and everyone settled in amongst the bowls for another uncomfortable sleep. "Injured Uyumak are, at the very least, a good omen," Jeff announced before lying next to Fenner. Maywan hoped he was right and meandered around the camp until everyone was asleep. As night deepened, she walked toward Jaren and Cadean, who took the first watch. The men guarded their charges silently, arms crossed against the cold, just inside the edge of the copse. Merel slept close by with her daughter, and Maywan took great care not to wake them. Their protectors sensed Maywan approach. "Have you heard anything unusual?" she whispered. "I think I can make out movement in the dark, though it is distant," Jaren replied. "Have care tonight," Maywan advised. "If there are still stragglers fleeing a battle, our little hideaway may seem as attractive to them as to us, though I would hope the smell of their own food would lend them enough iron to march the rest of the way to their camp."
"We had discussed the same," Cadean replied.
"Good. I will let Shatan's guard know as well." Maywan turned and started back toward the heart of the camp, when a bird trilled loudly in the distance. At its call, she stopped immediately and turned her head toward the sound. Again it broke the night. A smile crept across her face. When it sang the third time, she answered in kind, the call of the silver loon from the forests of her home. Only one person living would know the sound, or how to make it so well. She turned around. "I am going to scout a bit more," she explained to Jaren and Cadean. "I will return shortly." Neither appeared to think anything was amiss as she again disappeared into the night. She waited until she was well away from the camp before using the bird call again and waiting for its answer to guide her. For the first time in months, a genuine enthusiasm coursed through her veins. Wounded Uyumak and Jen arriving on the same day could be no coincidence. At last she saw them, Jen, Gerund and Volney, huddling against the lee side of a steep hill in a low thicket not a half mile from Shatan's camp. They stood as she approached and greeted her on the plain. The faces of the young men, bearded, gaunt and grey in the night, matched those of her own party, and at her approach only Gerund and Volney managed a grin. Jen's severe demeanour dampened Maywan's excitement at seeing him again. The lines on his face and the gravity of his eyes immediately refreshed to her mind the scenes played out at Elder Luri Mora, and at once she comprehended the weight of his predicament and his sorrow. "Your coming brings great joy, Jen," Maywan greeted him in Elvish, despite his determined solemnity. "I am glad to see you well. How fares the Shalane and her party?" Jen asked, voice tired. "They are frustrated and trapped. Health has favoured us, but there is little else good to be said. The food runs short and the Uyumak bar the way home." "We've been without food for 2 days ourselves," Jen reported. "The Uyumak have killed all the game. We have help for the last. Where are you encamped?"
"Not far from here. A contingent of Uyumak limped past our position this evening. I take it you are responsible then?"
"Yes," Jen said. "But what aid we have brought is not wholesome. It is a long tale. Tonight you will see green lights upon the hill that leads to the shore. Stay well away from them. In the morning your prospects will be brighter, I think."
"As you wish. What do you plan to do?"
"I need to talk to Mirel. Does everyone know who I am?"
"What do you mean?"
Maywan asked, eyebrows knitting together. She thought she caught a flash of hope in Jen's eye.
"Forget it. Do you think I could speak to her alone? I know Cadean will be nearby, but it cannot be helped."
"It is possible, but not wise. If Aethon were to trap you again, you would not escape his justice."
"See if he is asleep. If you can bring Mirel a little apart from the camp, that will be best, but if not, I will risk venturing in. I will be brief.
Once the night's business is done, we three will try to reach the portal before the rest. If we get there before Aethon, then perhaps we can pass through without any difficulties.
Remain here, Maywin said. I will return shortly.
Gerund and Volney approached Jen as Maywin loped away.
Well, Volney asked, anything you would like to share with us?
I will wait while Gamma Dron does his work, Jen said. I'm going to speak to the First Mother.
That is insane, Jen, Gerund protested. You'll be caught.
It matters little anymore. The Shalane will get off the shard now, and that is really all I can do for her anymore.
You will soon know why.
Stay here. If I do not come back, or even if I do, you are free to find your own path. Again, I thank you for your help and remind you of your vow.
Maywin returned shortly and waved him after her. When visible between waves of mist, the night sky gleamed full of stars above them, the moons suffusing the fog with an ethereal glow. Uyumark drums beat slowly and irregularly in the night, footsteps of half-elf and man crushing the damp grass, the only other sound in the still night. Mirel waited just outside the trees, Cadean close behind. Her hood was off and she fussed with her hair while casting glances into uncertain gloom. Jen approached her quickly and knelt before her, head bowed.
Forgive me, Mirel, Jen intoned sorrowfully. I've done you and your daughter a great wrong.
Get up, Jen, Mirel commanded, grabbing his arm and pulling him upward. M'lady, I...
His words were quelled by her lips on his, and his concentration wandered as she covered his face with kisses and tears.
Please, Mirel, Jen begged. I have things I need to say, and I won't listen to one word until you have held me until I am warm again. I have been cold for so very long. Come, sit against this tree. Not another sound unless I command it.
Jen obeyed, Mirel melting into the circle of his embrace. Her warmth and affection dulled his impatience and fear of discovery, and he relaxed, weeks of anxiety draining away. She laid her head on his chest, sporadically rising to kiss him. Eventually she quieted, and the comfortable glow of her presence and the deep rhythm of her breathing lulled Jen toward a sleep he knew would finally be free of fearful visions. But as his eyes fluttered, he denied himself such a dangerous escape, and he stirred, forcing himself awake.
You are more prickly than the last time I slept on your shoulder, Mirel reminisced dreamily, rubbing his beard with her hand. With effort she sat up and smiled at him. I wish you loved me as you love my daughter.
Shame rose within him. It was wrong of me to let my feelings for her get out of hand. It was unforgivable and foolish at best.
No, Jen, Mirel whispered, leaning into him again. I am glad of it. Every woman should know the love of a good man, and you have given her that gift. Your words and your consideration have strengthened her and edified her in ways only I would notice.
But I am not that good man, Mirel. I've come because I wanted to apologize for not listening to you and not obeying Lady Cairn.
Do not call her that.
It is who she is, Mirel.
It is not, Jen. That is what she is called by anyone who does not know her. You know better than to ever associate her with that name.
I am sorry, but I have something else I must tell you. It won't be easy for you, but I want you to hear it from me and not Aethon. Mirel, I am the Ilk.
Her soft laughter caught him off guard.
I know. Aethon does as well, but he hasn't told anyone yet. I've known for as long as Ethrys. He consulted me about it before letting you join the Protectorship. Please keep that fact to yourself. I have plans.
And you still let me...
Jen blurted out incredulously.
Yes, and I still let you guard my daughter. You had me in your power long before then. And I am happy to say that despite my blindness when it comes to your behaviour, I was right about you.
I don't know what to say.
Good. Then shut up for a little while longer.
She pushed him back against the tree, but he resisted.
I really should go, Jen said, a sudden sadness washing over him. I don't want to be trapped by Aethon again.
Mirel sighed disappointedly and rose.
Let me wake the Shalane, she said,
walking toward the camp. I'm sure she would like to see you. She has worried a great deal.
Jen pulled her back. No, Mirel, please. I've hurt her enough and I cannot face her. I have disgraced myself and failed her.
Please, Jen, that is nonsense.
It isn't. She hasn't told you all, I'm sure. I cannot see her. It will be best that she forget me.
Mirel's face wrinkled with worry.
I will respect your wishes, though I assure you that you do not comprehend her feelings for you at all.
She stepped forward and hugged him tenderly. One last kiss for a friend. He obliged her momentarily and tore himself away before he could enjoy it.
Tell them not to come toward the lights, Jen said as he turned to go. It will be a brighter day for you tomorrow.
Morel watched him leave, straining to see him in hopes that he would return and fill the emptiness she had lived with her entire life. Time slipped by, and something told her she would never again enjoy that voice or that embrace. There in the hollow night she felt as if a part of her died and slipped from her body to intermingle and slide away with the mist. Wiping her eyes and gathering herself, she found Maywin waiting for her by the chalet.
"Did he tell you about the lights?"
Maywin asked, tone guarded and eyes sympathetic.
"He did. Wake the others."
The Shalane had rarely felt what she considered spitting mad, but after her mother revealed to the party what Jen had told her, the Shalane was furious that her former protector had not spoken to her instead. She was the queen, after all. When her mother pulled her aside privately shortly thereafter and told her that Jen flatly refused an opportunity to see and speak with her, the Shalane nearly screamed in frustration despite their precarious circumstances. She had half a mind to command Maywin to find him and drag him back to her camp, but the sight of Aethon nearby forced her into more sensible thinking.
"You should stay well back within the grove, ladyship," Aethon suggested. "If Jen does bring some force and a battle is joined, this is a natural place of hiding and retreat for friend and foe. Stay close to your protectors."
"I will make him pay for this," the Shalane thought, ignoring Aethon completely.
No specific punishments leapt to mind, but she had ample time to exercise her creative powers. She dragged a protesting Dacen and Jaren toward the edge of the copse that faced the Uyumark at the wall. She wanted to watch, not cower. Everyone stood listening and peering into the dark from behind tree trunks, save Shatan, who had obeyed Aethon's advice. Several minutes passed in tense excitement, but as time wore on with nothing but darkness before them, her companions shifted and yawned.
"Something approaches," Maywin announced some time later. "Stand ready."
In a few moments the Shalane heard it. A large company passed well ahead of them in the dark, a discomforting hissing noise accompanying their passage. At once Uyumark drums pounded a new and frantic rhythm, and the sound of their marching filled the night.
"Whoever Jen brought. There are a lot of them," Jaren commented.
"I do not like the sound of their passing,"
Aethon gasped.
"We are in grave peril. Merciful Eldaloth, what he brought with him has an ancient mind and an evil heart. We must flee this place at once."
The sight of 9 ghoulish lanterns unshuttering 100 yards from their position tore all eyes away from the Padra and onto the field. 9 pools of green mist flickered before them as short figures bearing sharp axes and heavy hammers crossed between them and the light.
"Dwarves?"
Maywin half announced and half asked.
"It is not the minds of dwarves that I sense," Aethon said, voice quavering. "I recommend we retreat."
"No,"
the Shalane piped in firmly, her ill mood lending her words a sharp tone of command.
"Jen would not endanger us. We wait here."
Aethon regarded her briefly.
"Perhaps I should consult the Blessed One."
"Yes,"
the Shalane derided inwardly. "Go convince your puppet to order us to leave."
"The drumming and thumping has stopped,"
Maywin announced unnecessarily.
"What is at work here?"
Their straining eyes could just make out the shapes of Uyumark slowly and reverently approaching the luminescent mist. More approached, peeking around each other's shoulders at the lamps, a great horde of them ringing around the lights until only the faintest of glows could be discerned above the throng. Shatan approached.
"Aethon has apprised me of the danger, and I command everyone to—"
A thunderous crash of colliding bodies and weapons drowned out the rest of his order. 2 mute parties strove with each other in the confused black. No screams of pain or rallying cries pierced the night, only the hissing of serpents and the thumping of overmatched Uyumark. At first, the lanterns provided some illumination, casting wild and frightening shadows into the air, but all too soon rushing feet kicked them over for corpses to fall on and smother. Full dark reclaimed the mist, amplifying the eerie sounds as they stared ahead in vain.
"Something is nearing," Maywin warned them, drawing her bow. "Probably deserters?"
Those with weapons drew them.
"Ready your magic, sire,"
Aethon admonished his charge, who withdrew farther behind a tree that shielded him. Maewyn released two arrows into the dark before a line of Uyumark warriors emerged from the mist, stumbling over each other in full retreat. Dacen pushed the Shalane behind him, but upon seeing armed men ahead of them, the Uyumark turned and faced their pursuers, and what came after them in the dark stole the breath from every throat. The terror the Shalane felt at the sight of the Uyumark paled in comparison to the horror of what Jen had brought to slaughter them. Dark, sleek vipers intertwined with dwarven bones, providing strength to long-dead limbs in a perverted, counterfeit resurrection. Snake heads poked from empty eye sockets, and the lithe bodies of other vipers provided the skeletons with musculature to walk and to grip wicked battle axes as bright as the day they rose from the forge. But more than this, the ire of a trapped malice exuded from the unholy warriors in palpable waves emanating from the tiny, wet eyes of the serpents that opened a window to the wicked intelligence that commanded them. The snake-animated dwarves pushed the Uyumark backward toward the copse, hewing their enemies down brutally without finesse. Rarely an Uyumark would score a hit and a serpent would fall to the ground, only to be replaced by a reinforcement slithering up the frame until the creature was again complete. The last Uyumark fell not 10 feet from the edge of the woods, an axe blade chopping into the space between its head and shoulder. One of the monsters stepped forward, and the vipers of its body turned their gaze upon the Shalane's party. A snake slithered into the space where a dwarven tongue had once rested.
"Are there more?"
it hissed.
"Leave us be," Aethon yelled. "Back to the abyss with you,"
the Padre gestured, incanting a spell. Nothing happened as he moved his arms and chanted frantically.
"Pitiful fool," the snake mocked. "The only reason you are not meat for my children is that we are bound to obey the One. Do you want to know my mind? Then learn!"
Aethon screamed, spine arching as if someone had stabbed him in the small of the back, falling to the ground, wrenched in agony.
"Your mind is a paddle, and mine an ocean. You have no room for the flood."
The creatures turned and ran toward the sound of distant battle, and Aethon went limp. Maewyn knelt by him, but he waved her back, managing to slump against a nearby tree.
"What imagination could create such an abomination? What will could control it?"
The Shalane had clutched a branch near her so tightly that her fingernails had sunk into the bark. Her mother stood nearby, face and eyes blank. Seeing her mother reminded her to be angry at Jen, though she wondered how he had come to ally himself with such a terror, and if he was in danger in the mayhem in the dark. The only thing more unforgivable than not seeing her would be for him to die before she could properly chastise him for it. The sounds of battle rose and fell, gradually fading in frequency and duration, until the faintest rays of light coloured the horizon and all sound ceased. The absence of Uyumark drums, the party's constant companion for days, was the most keenly and most welcomely missed. Figures milled about, half seen in the mist, but the weary survivors of the caravan waited, not daring to step out and investigate, and having no desire to give thanks to the dark creatures to whom they owed their liberty. When the sun rose high enough to burn off the mist, they stared with astonishment at the grassy slopes before them. Not one corpse, amputated limb, or ruptured serpent littered the field. All weapons, drums, and cook-pots had gone. Only the blood on the grass evidenced the battle of the previous night or the presence of the Uyumark the weeks before, and even that seeped into the ground as melting frost carried it to the earth. Tentatively, Maewyn led them from the copse and into a day dawning cold and clear. They walked past the fortifications and to the lakeshore. There they found sand discoloured with ash and the charred remains of the barges that had brought them to where they now stood. They scanned the water near the cliff edges in the hopes of perhaps finding a barge that had strayed and caught on the rocks, but no such luck attended them. Fenner was first to voice the question.
"What now?"
"I will try to communicate with the other Padres," Aethon announced, "but I will need my privacy."
"I thought you couldn't do that across shards," Maewyn said.
"I am hoping a Padre will be stationed at the floating dock. I will return to the trees. Do not follow. I shall return shortly."
"Shall I accompany you?"
Shatan asked hopefully.
"Not this time, Your Grace. Please stay with your queen and see to her safety and comfort."
Aethon shouldered his pack, striding purposefully up the hill. As he reached the top, he exhaled and turned, finding the others milling about the beach or reclining on the sand. Maewyn had thrown in a fishing line, and Aethon mentally prayed for her success. Freshly broiled fish, even something as inferior as carp, would brighten his mood considerably. But as for that, as he turned his back and found himself truly alone for the first time in weeks, his anxiety drained from him. Peace. Only in blessed solitude could he calculate the true weight of the grinding burden that guiding Shertan had placed upon him. A necessary duty, but a difficult one. Shertan's wants and selfish needs loomed so large that they blocked the young king's vision of the necessary and expedient. Miles of danger, carnage, and exhaustion had failed to aid a nobler character to develop. Aethon's fellow padres would certainly find Shertan's nascent sobriety encouraging if any of them could distinguish it from his egregious cowardice. "Suffering does not ennoble man. It is the invitation to nobility," Aethon reminded himself. And if moulding Shertan into a king were not trial enough, Aethon had to instruct him how to appreciate and respect the most beautiful woman in the world. Of all the tasks, that should come naturally to a young man, even if an Ogmerian. Of course, the Ilk had poisoned her opinion of him, and she had failed to show a properly submissive attitude until after facing the Throgs. But even then he sensed a firm will within her waiting to assert itself, no doubt at some disastrous moment for Shertan and the world. Pushing these thoughts aside, he entered the copse, unpleasant memories of the past several days returning. He continued on until he could no longer see the field or the lake, and after casting a quick ward to turn away visitors, he opened his pack. Reaching deep inside, he pulled the assassin's glass out and unwrapped it from its cloth. Miles of travel had not broken or tarnished the artifact that he had pilfered from Regent Ogbith so many weeks ago. "Aethris thought himself so clever," Aethon thought. "I suspect I thought of bringing it long before he did." When he had gone to the church archive to fetch it, only to find it missing, it took little reasoning to connect its disappearance with the reports of Aethris and Caimas on the road together in Muir Eldaloth. Turning the mirror toward him, he nearly laughed at the weathered, unkempt face presented to him. The man in the mirror rubbed his tanned forehead and scratched at a beard he could not wait to shave off. He lost several moments contemplating his reflection, but the thought of cooked fish awaiting him on the shore prompted him to hurry. He stared intently into the magical device. "Pardon, Nolan?" The mirror flashed blue for a few moments before resolving on the back of a balding head. Padre Nolan sat at his desk in a tent, a lantern providing him light as he read a letter in the pre-dawn chill. "Padre Nolan," Aethon called softly, and the older man jumped and turned, nearly upsetting the lantern. His eyes cast about frantically before finding the small portal hovering in the air.
"Padre Aethon," he exclaimed, "Eldaloth be praised. We had nearly despaired of you. Shertan, does he live?"
"Yes, fortunately, as does the Shalane, who is pregnant with the holy child. The first mother and a handful of others also survived. All the Elderfair we secreted on this mission died in an attack at Dunnock Falls."
"We heard of that event 3 weeks ago."
"How?" "Aethris, Shadan Cairn, and a few soldiers escaped death that day, but were pursued by a large body of Uyumark to the fortifications on the beach. They rode away while soldiers bought them time." Aethon nodded. "All were apparently killed in that attack. The Uyumark held the wall against us and burned the barges."
"We have been building boats as fast as we can," Padre Nolan reported. "We still don't have enough to shuttle enough soldiers to—"
"There is no need now. The Uyumark were killed."
"By what means?"
"That can wait. Just send whatever barges or boats you have prepared immediately. I have a job of the utmost secrecy to assign to you."
"Name it, Your Grace."
"You will have questions about what I am to tell you. Do not ask them now, but suffice it to say that Jen betrayed the Har Ulrich during the marriage." Padre Nolan's mouth opened with questions, threatening to spill out in a rush, but Aethon stopped him short.
"No questions for now, there is a lot to explain, but listen, do you have any of the Elderfear with you?"
"Yes, but good. Jen is running fugitive somewhere on this shard with Gerund Kildan and Volney Tarun. I have reason to believe that they may be able to reach the portal gate before us. I would like you to wait for him on the floating dock. Act relieved to see him, but when you get the chance, cast a stupor upon him, restrain the others, and then drug Jen so that he does not wake. Drug the others as well if you feel it necessary. Keeping Jen unconscious, however, is of utmost importance. Do you understand?
Yes.
But what do I do with them? Sneak them back through the portal in a supply wagon as secretly as you can. Take them somewhere in the woods, and when I return I will explain everything.
Keep the Elder Fan near them at all times.
As you wish, Your Grace.
What if they do not come?
They will eventually. If I know Jen, he will follow the Shalane wherever she goes. For now, however, get the barges moving and make the preparations I have asked.
It will be done, Padre.
Ethan relaxed his concentration, and the mirror resolved to a reflection of his face. After carefully concealing the assassin's glass in his pack, he started his hike back to the beach. Everything hinged on catching Jen. Without one feat, he could protect Shatan and control the First Mother. Best of all, he could eliminate the Ilk and foil Mikik before the babe was ever born. Volney breathed easily for the first time in days. Gamma Doron's serpent-animated dwarven host turned away from them and marched toward a nearby wood. From their vantage point within a stand of scrub oak on the cliff, Volney, Jen, and Gerund spied the Ha'ulric's party resting on the beach. Gerund regarded the Shalane's party face a mixture of emotions. Volney thought he understood, for he felt the same. He wished he could return to them and share in the relief of deliverance from a shard he hoped never to see again. The idea that they would return to Rugarth as fugitives rather than heroes nearly crushed them both, and by Jen's somber looks, Volney thought him the worst afflicted. Of course, Jen had risen higher and fallen further than either of them, and for that Volney could sympathize. The journey through the Shroud Lake Shard had changed the complexion of prophecy, and they all wondered if the mistakes and missteps had somehow ruined the future events they had all worked and sacrificed for. For his part, Volney still placed the blame on Shatan. Once he saw Maewyn broiling fish on the beach, however, he wondered if he could beg the Ha'ulric's forgiveness. Jen returned shortly after Gamadron disappeared from sight.
"It will make us a raft we can use to get us over the lake," Jen reported, voice gruff and drained.
"It will be ready soon, and Gamadron will lower it, and us, to the lake. I've commanded it to kill any Uyumark it finds after that."
"Do I even want to know how it will lower us down?" Volney asked.
"Probably not," Jen replied.
Gerund turned away from his vigil on the beach and faced Jen.
"How is it you can speak to that monstrosity?"
"I wish I knew,"
Jen answered. "It uses the same black speech as the demon used during the betrothal, only it speaks to the mind."
"And where does one learn the black speech? In Tolnor?"
Gerund pressed.
"I never learned it, at least not that I remember. I cannot account for it."
Conversation died as they lay on the ground and slept soundly. Gamadron returned in the afternoon with a rickety raft, roughly hewn by dwarven battle axes. It was little better than what peasant boys would lash together in an afternoon.
"Nice," Volney commented sarcastically, "but I thought the barges were bad.
Here's hoping they believe us when we get to the portal, if we don't drown first."